Blog Talk Radio.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're doing this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
All right.
Here we are. What is today? Today's the 11th. Last week we did not have a show because of the 4th of July. So I wish everyone listening still has all 10 fingers and no gunpowder injuries of any sort or style or way. People get crazy. My grandfather was crazy with fireworks. You know, he'd light a firecracker and throw it right at you in your lap. I mean, he was...
God, wow.
Yeah, I know. He thought it was funny. He was crazy.
Yeah.
4th of July, we'd go up to the farm, and we'd all be sitting outside and doing, you know, barbecue outside. Yeah. And he'd be sitting there and get a handful of fireworks and light them and just throw it in your lap. And you'd jump up and brush it off, and the thing would go off, and you'd yell, "Grandpa, don't do that." He'd laugh. You know, fun. But only time he was crazy. I mean, he was, you know, good grandpa most of the time. But boy, I tell you what, when it came to fireworks, he was nuts. So hope everyone had a safe and happy 4th of July, and hope everything went well and all that. Didn't have a show last week. We do this week. Actually, we got guests coming up for the next, I think, 5 or 6 weeks. But we do have a guest tonight. We have Bill and Doris Cooper that's going to be joining us. Actually, they are waiting in the green room and enjoying all of our snacks we have in there for them. So we'll have them put everything down and swallow so they can talk, and we'll bring them on into the show. So welcome to the show, whoever this is, Bill or Doris or both of you.
It's Doris at the moment, and Bill will be joining in just a second.
Oh, okay. So welcome to the show, Doris.
Thanks, Ron.
We are going to talk about a field of grape growing and actually winemaking. I suppose it continues on into the winemaking that is really catching fire. It's something I think people aren't really aware of overall. They are aware of organic, because organic's out there in front of everybody all the time. But there are so many other aspects of sustainable growing and different things that I don't think people are aware of. So that's why you and Bill are going to tell us all that stuff tonight.
We love sustainable wine growing. That's what we're all about. Our property's been in the family since 1893.
Wow.
And as part of the fourth generation, working with the fifth now, it's all about the stewardship of this land and leaving it better than it was when we became involved also. Each generation has done their best. And with sustainable practices now, we can take that from the vineyard into the winery and make it part of a lifestyle.
That sounds like a fantastic way to do it, which I am sure interprets itself into an even better bottle and glass of wine when people do drink it.
And it makes sense business-wise, too. We're doing efficient things that are smart from the get-go. They're better for the environment. They're better for our economy and for our communities at large.
And I would add, it enables us. Go ahead.
Yeah, we got a bill. Okay.
Yeah, you got Bill. He's here. It enables us to benchmark what we're doing, because sustainability is all about continual improvement. I look at pictures of my grandfather out in the orchards fraying the prune and apricot trees and stuff like that, and I say, that's great, but there's how do you quantify that? At least I know he was there from a picture, but through the sustainability programs, whichever one anyone picks, you've got criteria that you can compare yourself with agreed-upon standards.
Tell us about sustainability. Okay, I understand what it is, but let's delve into it. What is sustainability? How do you, if you were a fledgling winery, what do you do to get sustainability certified? And how, after all that, how does it help the final class of wine?
Okay, Ron, you've hit a point that is a little bit of a thorn with me, and that's the certification part. That's later in life. The important thing about sustainability is continual improvement. Mm-hmm. And you start, we're CS, California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance, started almost 25 years ago. And it started as a self-help, getting everybody or people representatives of the industry together and come up with common, in our case, the CSWA, which is based upon Lodi rules, getting, are you one, a two, or three, or four, depending on what your practices are. And the neat thing about it, from my perspective, is you look at this, and you're going through the book, chapter and question, there are 14 chapters, about 250 questions, and you just look, okay, I'm a one, or I'm a two, or I'm a four. But when you do that, there's a little descriptor there, you see what's above it. Oh, yeah, I could do this, and I would become a three. Okay, and then you go on to the next question. So really, it's self-assessment. It's easy to do, and what it does give you is a big picture of your operation against the standards, the criteria that are out there, and then you find out the ones that you are most important to you. So it's not dictated. It's what makes economic sense to you as the farmer or the winemaker or both as to where you're going to put your effort, your time, your money towards improving your bottom line and your equity within the community and the economics of what you're doing and the ecology around you. So it's continual improvement. The only thing they ask is you do one thing a year. I remember the first time we did it when the work.
That's for certification.
No, anything. It should be one thing a year. I mean, because my point is it's continual improvement. And you go through there, and the first year I got a list of 40 or 50 wonderful things. Yeah, we could do that. We could do that. You know, oh, this one over here, too. And then you, okay, let's be realistic. How much can we accomplish over the next 12 months in addition to growing our vineyards and making the wine that we normally do? And that's where it comes in. It's very low-key when you just are doing it to improve your operation. Do it for a while. Do it for a year or two or three, and then when you have the hang of it, you understand it and you're comfortable with it and it makes sense to you and you see the benefits, then you can come back and look at certification programs. And then you're doing the same thing. There are some, there's, I don't know, 50 or 60 prerequisites where you can't just have a one. You have to have a two or something like that. And then you get to embark, and Doris pointed out that it's the certification. It's one, yes, you have to do one, but you still, even for any sort of self-improvement, you have to do something to improve. And
the book that Bill's talking about is called The Code of Sustainable Wine Growing Practices. It was put together with a consortium of people in the grape growing and wine making industry and environmentalists who specialize in ecology and efficiencies and things. It's available to anyone through the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance. And we're a very small winery. We produce 2,000 cases of wine a year. We have 28 acres of estate vineyards that are certified organic, but they're also certified sustainable, and the winery is certified sustainable as well. But this Code of Sustainable Wine Growing is available for anyone, and you could look at it if you're a small winery like us. Really smart people came together and put all these things in there. There will be stuff that if you're new, maybe you haven't thought about yet, and if you've been around a while, it'll help you get out of your old ways and see another possibility how to improve and become better. As you do that in the vineyard, you've got better soil health, you've got water efficiencies, you end up with, you're not doing the chemical applications, so your costs for that sort of thing are less than they might have been before, and you've got efficiencies that also turn around into having a healthier vineyard and really tasty grapes to make fine wine.
What are some things that you do that is classified as sustainable? You mentioned a couple there, but what is sustainable?
I'll go back to the very first thing when I went up and joined this joint community that Doris referred to. In the first 6 months of this 18-month project, was looking at what other people had done. All the programs to date had been just on vineyard sustainability. And then we got into writing chapters for the production side of it. And one of the things was material handling. I said, well, yeah, corks. What else can you do besides throw it away? They said, Bill, no, don't put it in the trash. Put it in a separate bin and let teachers come in and use it for craft projects. If you have too many of those, it goes in compost because we use all natural corks. So it's little things. And then we got the family interested in it, and that's when we put up our, in 2005 or 2006, our first 17 kilowatts of solar generation, which took a big hunk off of the winery's electric bill. And then 15 years later, we've quadrupled it. And so basically the whole operation runs off of that. Where do we put them? It's on top of the writing arena. So we're not using up land space. It's already up there.
Because we're co-located with Garrod Farms Writing Stable. This family has a huge equestrian operation as part of the business and the vineyards and the winery. So the covered riding arena was the perfect place to put solar panels. We're also in the Santa Cruz Mountains, Appalachian, and so we're not a flat place to farm. We have a lot of native oak trees that are around us as well. So nowadays you hear about hedgerows and things to try and have beneficial insects and pollinators. Grapes don't need pollinators, but if you're going to have cover crops that flower, maybe they do. We're very fortunate. We have bluebird boxes that we've put up, and the bluebirds help with integrated pest management.
Wow.
We've got boxes throughout the property. We have a couple of predator roosts, but with all the trees being so tall, having been here for over 100 years, some of them, the hawks and the predators have places to perch. We have owl boxes, so we do have owls as well. And being in the hillsides where we are, we have wild animals that we share wildlife corridors with. We have coyotes, bobcats that come through. And so we're very mindful of the nature on the hillside where we are as well. And our organic and sustainable farming practices are better for them too.
Would all that be part of sustainable, or is that just extra stars on your page with all the wildlife and what they contribute and everything?
The wildlife corridors and all, I mean, get back into individual things, but that's all part of sustainability. The pesticide use is really a farmer's decision. We made the decision to go organic in our system, and that is prescriptive. You either do this, you have to do this, you can't do that. But I go back, sustainability is just identifying all these different ways that you can improve your operation. And Doris has pointed out that, you know, the course material, so to speak, is available. It's in the public domain, sustainablewinegrowing.org. And I just encourage all your listeners who haven't really thought about it very much, or maybe have gotten, oh my God, certification, it sounds so hard. I can hear that message. But that's why you just start by evaluating your own process. Now, in arriving at a sustainable certified program, I was on the CSWA board when the motion started towards, instead of just a self-help program, make it a certification program. And frankly, that's when we started our organic transition, because I wanted to learn how other things operate. And also, my overriding thing, as Doris said, we're 2,000 cases, is to make sure whatever comes out of the other end of the process is usable by small wineries who do not have the resources to hire an environmental systems management team. So it's written so that the individual small operations can do it. As I said, it takes you 2 hours to do a self-assessment, maybe a little bit more. But you can, because it's all in your head. You know all these things. And then it spits back out to you, okay, here's the things that you said you want to look at. You know, now be realistic, because you picked a whole bunch of them. And you start with that on a slow tempo. Yeah, this one or that one, or maybe I just have to turn this around. Or maybe, stormwater drains don't say drain to the bay. Okay, you can do these lots of little things that get you started. Does that help at all?
That is really very descriptive, yes. Thank you. How is sustainable the next step past organic, or equal to, or how would you describe? Like I say, people understand organic.
They overlap.
They overlap.
Organic is organic in the vineyard, how you grow it, and as I said, it's prescriptive. You can't use this. You have to. They don't say you have to use this. They say you can't do that. And once you, the first thing that happens when you start going organic is there's no more prohibited by organic. No non-organic material can be applied in the vineyard forever, and there's a 3-year transition period. And then, the rest of it comes on. For sustainability, it is wherever you are, you pick from this 200, if you got vineyard and winery, 250 different questions, and I want to improve this or I want to improve that. So when you get into the internal process, there's overlap, and they're very complementary programs. You don't have to be organic to be sustainable, and sustainability helps with your organic program. I mean, there's things that are same, and don't ask me which ones they are.
I can give an example
there
that came to mind. So we're not using Roundup in our vineyards. We're not using that kind of weed killer or anything. So if we were doing organic, one farming practice that we do that's sustainable helps with soil health. We no longer till between the vineyard rows. We mulch mow. And in the hillside, that's important. Tilling we tried to not do anyway because of erosion from the hillsides. But mulch mowing also helps with the soil health. You've got the mulch that will eventually decompose and come back into the soil. And we also dry farm we have a drip irrigation out there to get the vines started. And when we had the severe drought years a while back, post-harvest, we would water the vines to make sure that they maintain their vigor and we're going to be ready for the next year's vintage. But the mulch mowing also gives a little carpet over the dirt and helps hold the moisture in because you've mulched it. That's something that is sustainability recognized, but it's not necessarily organic. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It's not on the organic checklist.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just, like I said, people know organic, and so sustainability is a little bit more conscientious of what you're doing as opposed to organic. Organic just seems basically vineyard control, but sustainability, you go beyond that.
Sustainability includes economic sides of things. It includes social equity, the way that you relate to your community as well. It looks at your use of resources, be that water or energy, electricity. We look at the carbon footprint that we have. Our wine bottles are much lighter now than they were in the 1990s. When we open one of our library bottles of wine, I'm always surprised how heavy the glass bottle is.
Yes.
And using lighter weight bottles, it means that the carbon to produce them is less. There's less transport cost with them because they're lighter weight. They're not quite as heavy. And it's a small thing, but overall, when you look at that, given that the California wine industry is the fourth largest in the world, it makes a difference. About 80% of the wine produced in California is sustainable at this point.
Oh, really?
And so when you look at that, movement and see how many people are on board with this, the industry as a whole is really working to do the right thing for the environment, for the communities, and be proactive in it.
Wow. 80% is the same. That shocks me. It really does.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that high.
Yeah.
Now, there are all sorts of certifications out there now. I'm sure you've heard of most of them and all that. We talked to a winery about, I don't know, what was it, Mike, about a couple years ago now, at least. And they were very, very proud of the fact that they just got a certification, but it included how they do the paperwork. They're inspected on the paperwork every 6 months or so. They're vineyard is maintained a certain way. The grapes, when they come in, have to be transported a certain way. I don't think it was, and we tried to find it. Mike and I both looked for it and tried to find it. We couldn't find it, but it seemed like a step beyond everything else.
Okay. Ron?
Yes.
What you're remembering and describing sounds more like organic standards, because the whole thing in organic is making sure no non-organic material gets in there. When you talk about how you're transporting it and things like that, it has to be, you know, be labeled, be kept apart in separate bills of lading, all sorts of stuff. And this is one of the reasons when we started on organic and sustainable, I went ahead and I got certified in the winery as well. Because it was the beginning step, which I didn't realize, and also changing our winemaking practices. Because after we started having had organic vineyards, and then I thought, well, what's the next step? And I looked at our neighbor's Ridge, and it's, you know, forget the commercial yeast, which are natural products, and we've been using our indigenous yeast from our vineyards for over 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And so what we have here, we have an AVA, American Viticulture Area, Santa Cruz Mountains, is isolated. It's small production. These are all estate grapes on organic vineyards. And so you've got a real sense of place. And then you bring in the indigenous yeast, and we just, you know, make the best wine we can with everything that is coming from this 120 acres above Saratoga and Cupertino.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So actually what I'm describing is organic, and you guys went a step further. Now, speaking
of...
For
organic certification, you do have to document. So you have to keep your receipts. You have to keep the sources. And that's part of what the certifiers will look at every single year. So as you were describing the process this other business went through, that's what happens when a third-party certifier comes in to really make sure that you're going to be certified. You will find wineries and vineyards who say that they farm organically, but they won't say that they're certified organic because they haven't had the outside third-party certifier come in and review all their records to put the stamp of outside approval on and say, yes, indeed you are. And that's what the certification process is. But there are places who do all of the practices. They just don't bother with the third-party certification.
And I want to disarm one point you said on the 6 months or something inspection. Our organic inspection, which is by CTOF, which is the oldest one in the country, is annual. And they come out and they look at your records and they go through that. And when you – and they're very good at it. I mean, they work with you. They want you to succeed. Because I go back to my first couple of years of inspection and, hey, this is a new thing. And they say, okay, Bill, now work. Yeah, this isn't quite right, but this is what you do. And so next year, then we'll come back and we look at it more closely. The sustainability, it's back to it's continual improvement. So it's in this case with CSWA, and when we put the program together, it was okay. Organic is every year, but you know that's money. You got to pay for that person to come out every year. How about if we do this? And we did 5 years, so that's not frequent enough. And 2 years seems a little bit over. Still a little tight. So how about if we have an on-site inspection every third year and then years two and three, because our whole system, the CSWA system, is all online. So the inspector can look at all your scores, go through, look at your comments, have any questions they have. And so it just you can do that. And then the third year they come out and okay, now let's check everything. Whatever there is there. And so it's a nice compromise. It helps keep the price down for the inspections. And,
it's
been going through, you know, certified inspections for, you know, I don't know how many years. Yeah.
And this is a lot of the detail about the program, but I think consumers, by and large, are looking for flavorful, nice wines that they can sit around a table and have with friends and family for dinner. We're in the summertime now. Maybe you're out on the patio and you need a summer sipper at the end of the day, and you're visiting with each other about what the day had or what's coming up on the weekend or whatever that is. And sustainable wines, we hope, not only reflect the sense of place, they're made by and large with minimal interventions, and so they don't have additives and things in them. And you can feel good about responsibility in the production of them, but what that translates to is a very nice wine in your glass. And you can find an assortment of wines through CSWA. The sustainability logo is on labels now. So,
oh, good.
So wine buyers can look for that when they're on the looking across the shelves at however many all labels there are in the wine shops these days, so many. But you can have that reassurance that your values for the planet are being heard and represented in our industry as well.
What is the difference between regenerative and sustainability?
Regenerative farming.
Oh, regenerative.
I'm going to let Bill take that one.
That one sort of came out of right field, not from you, but over the last couple of years. And so I've looked into that. And they have five criteria on it. And the only – we used to have sheep running around the vineyard until the coyote ate them. So we – but we take credit for the compost, which is two organic standards, from the manure from the horses. And that gets applied periodically into the field. And the other was, it's as Doris said, dry farming with a drip backup. So it is regenerative, and it's interesting process. I don't know, it was, you know, that sort of comes under the heading of a third thing. And I, we make that cutoff.
Regenerative farming, as I understand it, has a very dedicated focus on developing the soil health and making sure the microbes are vital, that you've got the proper amount of nutrient in there that will sustain the plant and be good for carbon sequestration. And so it's another layer of detail for farming.
Just
and
like
a small operator, and biodynamic is yet another. And
yeah,
I have to be quite honest, I haven't looked into as many details on those.
But Amigo Bob was big on the biodynamic, and there's some other vineyards operations in the state. You know, the ones that are very much into it. And there, again, you know, the cow horn with the compost, with the tea, in relation to the moon and stuff. And I was starting here at one point to say, I can handle two programs. And so we do organic and we do sustainable. there are several other you can do, but then you're really adding on more things. And if you want to be biodynamic, then you go biodynamic. I don't... Seems to me probably if you're doing biodynamic, you probably very easily qualify, or you qualify, you're doing the same practices as organic. And then it's a question if you want to have two inspectors or one, and if you want to pay more money for it to have the other one come out. And there's also only so much label space and how many things you're going to put on there.
Yeah, that's very true. So many surfing. I wasn't trying to put you on the spot asking those questions about these others, because I hear about them all the time. We actually interviewed a biodynamic winery over in Mendocino County. There's a couple of them over there, and we talked to a guy, and he was really into the biodynamic aspect of farming. It was something that he swore by, and you know, good for him. No judgment one way or the other. I mean, it's not any more work once you get established than anything else. But
it's no more work once you get there. And the same thing with organic and certified sustainable. Once you get there, you just keep finding things to improve upon. I mean, there's 250 in the... You know, you got more than enough time to do all that. Some things are more expensive, some things are less. Some don't cost any money at all, and most of them, in some form, will save you money because you're becoming more efficient.
Yes, and you know, and that's the way it is with most of the certifications. It's just a matter of which ones appeal to you and which ones you are comfortable with. I guess is the word I'm looking for.
Well, almost. Certification requires they have some you have to have. And that 52 or 62, whatever the number was I gave you. And then after that, it's continual improvement. And That's it. I mean, there you go. And the other two, biodynamic and organic and
regenerative,
are all prescriptive. You have to, you know, thou shalt do this or not do that. And regenerative is evolving, I guess. I see it more in the press than I do in a certification program.
And it's been more written about than actually practice.
Yeah. So it's valid, but it just doesn't have the maybe I just don't know enough about it. We went to a Sierra Club presentation a couple of months ago, and he was talking about regenerative ag and some aspects of it, and that's when I looked at Dorothy. That's what we're doing, you know. Well, okay, what else is new?
Yeah.
So
And that's it. I'm finding, as I talk to different wineries and stuff, most of the certifications are pretty close. There's just a few little things here and there that you do differently, more so in biodynamic than anything, with, like you say, the planting of the horns and harvesting by the moons and stuff like that. But otherwise, they're all pretty close. Go on.
They also, on the sustainability, they started out regionally. Lodi, and then the Central Coast, and then CSWA, and then later they came up with Napa Green. And along the way was fish-friendly farming up in Sonoma, Mendocino. So, and CSWA is the only one that is a statewide, and that's why it took us a year and a half to do the issues, because we had to resolve regional differences into a common language that everybody could relate to. But I agree that they're all doing the same thing.
Yeah. Trying to improve the wine.
Yes, exactly. And in terms of regions, the Sonoma County wine growers are over 95% certified sustainable. And they chose to do the CSWA, California Certified Sustainable Wine Growing Program, for their certification. But as a region, they came together and said, we want to make this happen. And so their region took CCSW as their certifier and have had great success with that and continue to make improvements too.
They came out in 2015 and said, in the next 5 years, we want to have 99 or 100% of our members certified. And they hit that in 3 or 4 years. It was a regional approach, and that was I continue to be impressed.
I was going to say that is impressive.
Pull that off.
Yes.
And you go up there, and it's beautiful countryside, and it's still open and all that. I mean, it's a lot of open space. It's not like being in the Santa Cruz Mountains, but gosh, it's great because there's wine, there's cheese, there's oysters on the coast, there's a robin out there on the bank.
Sustainability, you're talking California. Is this a trend that's catching on across the country that you're aware of, or around the world, or is this, you know, local? What's happening with sustainability?
International, but almost out of necessity, people develop their own. But the consultants that are guiding them all go to the same schools and get the same criteria and the same education as to what's important. And so it all comes back around, and the CSWA is all – there's grants, everybody, you know, there's grants out there for people to do this. U.S. Department of Agriculture in California, Cal Fish and Wild. No, we're not.
California
Fish
Department Fish
and... No, it's the Ag and something.
Yeah.
It's got grants and programs that are encouraging, you know, people to do this. And the other, and this is a good point, all these programs are locally generated by people, the farmers, the winemakers that are doing this. So this is, they're all bottom up. I go back to Lodi. They got together and we want to do this. We want to do something. And they got together and they wrote their program. And that was the foundation with their consent, because we looked at a couple of different we had a consultant that guided 50 of us through different certification, way other people are doing before certification, programs for continual improvement. And we talked about it, and we liked the Lodi approach, which is this 1-2-3-4. Central Coast uses a positive point, and it was just a democratic vote. Okay, who wants to do this, and who wants to do it that way? And we picked it, and then we went from there. We tweaked what they had, which is regional, to make it statewide. And then, as I said, we went on and wrote the chapters for the production side.
You mentioned the different types of approaches, but they're all basically the same, though. I mean, it's just wording to get to the final point.
Has anybody mentioned the Green Award yet?
No, we were going to get into that right now. So since you brought it up.
The Green Award is for all these transition points. All these
the Green Medal. It's called the Green Medal.
Green Medal, what I say, Green Award, yeah. The Green Medal, so all these 5-6 different certifying organizations came together to get the best of the best, so to speak, of all of them. And so it's somebody from every organization and outside, and they get together and they look at the applications and then they pick somebody. Is that fair?
And it's for leadership and sustainability, and it's presented by the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance, the California Association of Wine Grape Growers, the Wine Institute, the Lodi Wine Grape Commission, Napa Valley Vintner, Napa Green, Sonoma County Wine Growers, and Central Coast Vineyard Team. So it's a large group that comes together, and they have representatives from each of those organizations on the judging panel. They also have sommeliers, restaurateurs, some outside consultants and independent people in the industry. And so they come together each year. This year was the 10th anniversary of the Green Medal Awards. There's one for leadership overall. There's one for the environment, one for business. And Cooper Jared Vineyards was recognized with the Community Award this year.
Fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, considering all the ones involved in that and all the possibilities and all the ones that are voting on that, that is really quite a good recognition there. Good award. Congratulations.
We're humbled and very, very happy about it.
I can imagine. Yeah, you should be. Oh, fantastic! So, what does the award you got involves? What? Why? What was the criteria for your particular award?
Our family is quite involved in our local community and throughout the county. We have people who serve on the Wine Institute Board, the California Farm Bureau Board, the local water board. The sanitary district, the fair commission, the county fair, the cemetery district, Peninsula Open Space Trust, educational foundations as well. We also do stroll and sip for six tours as our charity donations. And so organizations are always asking wineries for donations. And we donate an experience. And so the person who buys this at the auction can come with a group of six people, and they have a hands-up, very close and personal tour that starts with our family's history here and goes into the vineyard, so they get to see the vines up close and personal, whatever the growing season is at that point in time. They see the crush pad and our tank farm. They're in the cellar with all the barrels and the wine aging. And ultimately then they get to choose a tasting flight and see what comes of it all. So they've heard a little bit about our history and our farming approach and our family's dedication to this land, and then they get to enjoy the wines here.
Wow.
So we try to support organizations. That includes schools, mental health, our chambers of commerce, history foundations, mm-hmm. veterans,
and yet,
lots of
with,
things in the community.
And yet, with all of that, you still have time to make wine.
So that's where the fifth generation comes in.
Yeah, okay. And which is a good segue into the wines themselves. I want to talk about your wines a little bit. You make three whites and two whites and five reds. I'm on your page here.
So we actually make a third white that's a blend of our Viognier and Chardonnay.
Oh, okay.
If you're not seeing it on our website page because it's sold out at the moment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we do different varietal wines. We have Viognier and Chardonnay for our white varietal. We have Cabernet Franc, Pinot Noir, Merlot, Syrah, Cabernet Sauvignon for our red varietal. And we do a series of blends, proprietary blends, the Viognier and Chardonnay together, and then different red blends. They're called our test pilot wines because our founding winemaker, Bill's dad, was a research test pilot for NASA. And winemaking for him was a 20-year retirement hobby until, like a good engineering project, it got out of hand and he started a commercial label with the family. And so our blends are a nod to the joy that George had making wine and getting family involved and working here. And so our blends are all different test pilot blends with a specific aircraft for each one.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds interesting. Your wines themselves, the ones that you come out with all the time, are they all grown on your property or do you bring in grapes?
Yes. No, we only make wines from our estate grapes. We're able to monitor how they grow, how they're tended. We can pick them when they're ready. And so we only use our grapes in our wines. We still sell grapes to other wineries, but
we
don't
still have enough
them.
For that? Oh, wow.
We do. Yes, we do.
How many acres do you have under vine?
28 planted vineyards.
Then that's really quite a bit then, yeah. So I'm going to ask, how many acres of each grape do you have? I mean, how much Chardonnay, Vernet, the Pinot Noir, Cab Franc, Cab Sauvignon, and Syrah, and the Merlot?
Yes.
How much of each?
Okay, let's start with Cabernet Sauvignon. There is 9 and 2 is 11 acres. There are three acres of Pinot. It's almost 2 acres of Viognier, 2 acres of Syrah, 5 acres of Cabernet Franc, and almost an acre of Petit Verdot. Merlot, and an acre of Merlot.
Okay. The Petit Verdot is used as a blend then?
Well, it was. It's the most recent one, because when Doris and I came back, they had Cabernet Sauvignon, Syrah, the Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, and Cabernet Franc. And after we got here, convinced the family we needed to have some more grapes, especially the Merlot, so then we'd have 3 grapes for our blend, our Bordeaux style. And Marty Mathis at Captain Kennedy had just been very successful with Syrah, locally sourced, and so we got the Syrah, and then we needed another white. My folks had enjoyed in their wine tasting group a Roussanne down on the coast. Well, as we were getting the label approval for it is when the California wine industry discovered that the Roussanne that had come from Bonnie Dune to Zaca Mesa and then spread out around the state was actually Viognier.
Oh, really?
So that's why ours is the Randall Graham clone, because Randall's the one that
brought the suitcase clone in the 80s.
Years and years ago.
Ah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
so we planted Roussan in all good faith, but we harvested Viognier quite knowingly at the time.
Ah, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that story. I didn't know that. Oh, that's good. I'm a big Cabernet Franc man. I love Cabernet Franc. It's,
well, ours is one you should get to know then, Ron. It's
yeah?
luscious. You've got nice raspberry fruit flavors, lovely brown spices, that little hint of ivy or briar, and it's wonderful. We've been having a heat wave out here right now, and so this
is the
time of year we do chill it lightly. When Bill and I lived in Paris and we were down in the Chinon region, it was a hot summer day, and we were served some chilled Cabernet Franc. It was marvelous. So that's something we've continued ever since. So.
Oh, what did we have last night with Cabernet Franc? Granita.
We made a raspberry Cabernet Franc Granita. And it was quite nice. On our website, you're looking at that and seeing the wines. Our website is garagefarms.com. And when you click on the winery part, you can not only look at the wines, we also have recipe pairings. And so when you click on the recipe pairings, you can choose which food course you're looking for, or you can choose which wine you're looking to cook something to go with. And the raspberry Franc Granita is one of the dessert recipes or the Cabernet Franc recipe.
Oh, there's the recipe pairings. I was looking for the. There they are. Okay.
There you go.
There's some very good-looking recipes here, too. Wow.
Well, they're all tried and tested around our dinner table at home. And our daughters, when they were growing up, we'd have the meal, and when they were older, then they could have the wine with it, of course. And I have to say, over the years, there have been a few that, Mom, this one isn't really a keeper. So then we have to try something else. And once in a while that happens, you have a recipe and you think, oh, I bet it would be good with this. And you try it and go, not so much.
Yeah,
Yeah, so everything that's on the website is tried and tested. You can be confident in that.
And
a lot of recipes,
because Doris has been coming up with a food and wine pairing for every club release since we started our club 20 years ago. And so there's a lot of them in there. And
yes, there are. There's some good-looking recipes here, too.
That's the joy of having wine, Ron, is to have something that goes with it. And for anyone who's worried about, oh, there's this wine, I don't know what to serve with it, or maybe, like me, you've been cooking dinners for how many decades now, and you just want some new inspiration. So you can go to the website and take a look and find something that appeals to you.
Yeah, there you go. And there's the great list of recipes there. It's unbelievable how many six on a page, and then you have 18 pages. So there's some absolutely delicious sounding recipes there. Are all of your wines aged in oak, or do you do stainless steel on anything?
No, the Viognier is stainless and a little bit of neutral oak. Everything else is in French oak, and the oak program varies from 25% to 50%, depending on the wine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you? And how long are they in oak? Year?
Cab Sauvignons are 2 years, and then the Pinot, the Syrah, Merlot, Franc, and Petit
Sardot
and the Chardonnay are all 1 year.
Okay. Yeah, that's a pretty standard time. You get just enough oak in there just to balance it well, you know. Let's see, there was something else I saw that I was going to ask about. I'm flipping through your website here looking. If anybody wants to check this out, the website, Is it Gerard or Gerard? Is it hard G or soft G?
It's Gerard, like Harrods in London, but with a hard G. Gerard.
Okay, Gerard. Okay, Gerard Farms. GarrodFarms. GarrodFarms.com, and that will take you to a very good website. I mean, it's got a lot of different things here, a lot of information. And, you know, it talks about the varietals, it talks about the winery, the stables, everything. And so if y'all want to check that out. Are you taking reservations for tastings? Are you open tastings? What are you doing on that now?
Yes.
Okay.
We're open every day. We're open weekdays from noon to 5 and weekends 11 to 5. Weekends tend to be busier, especially the days where we have live music in the afternoon. And so we do recommend reservations, especially on weekends. If people are coming around and they make a reservation ahead of time, we're small. That helps us with our staffing needs to look ahead and see that. But weekdays, most of the time, there's space for walk-ins. If it's a group more than six people, we very much appreciate reservations because that means we're putting more tables together for a larger number of people.
All right. Okay. What do you charge? Do you charge for a tasting? How much?
You can choose a tasting flight that runs between $22 to $25, depending on the wine. The fancy flight includes some library wine, so it's a little bit more expensive. You can also look at the list and say, oh, I enjoyed this varietal. May I have a glass of that wine? Or you can buy a bottle to share around the table. We have a lovely menu of small bites with cheeses, crackers, charcuterie, olives, nuts, non-alcoholic beverages as well. And so you can order something for that. I think it's a great place for ladies' lunches to catch up with friends and do that sort of thing. But most any time it's relaxing because we're only 25 minutes from downtown San Jose.
You
come to the ranch, we are very close. But when you come to the ranch, you really feel like you've gotten away from everything. One of my girlfriends says, oh, when I come to see you, I just feel my shoulders go down and relax, and I breathe more easily. It's just a lovely place to come and kick back and kind of recharge your batteries.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like it. I didn't realize you just drive the hill from San Jose then. I mean, oh, geez.
We are.
You know, I was expecting you further away from civilization, you know, like, you know.
It feels like it.
Yeah, once you get up there in the hills, I can imagine. Wine clubs and all that stuff is available then?
Yes, we have a wine club that doesn't cost to join. You get charged for the wines when they ship, and we do quarterly shipping. We ask for a minimum one-year membership, and each shipment is 2 to 3 wines and always includes a paired recipe for one of the wines in the group. You can do a 3-bottle, 6-bottle, or case membership. Local folks come to pick up parties, release parties here at the winery. And it's a 20% discount on wines for club members.
Wow.
And you don't have to come to the winery to join the club. And we ship to virtually almost every state that allows direct consumer shipping.
Right,
so the ones we don't do either prohibit it or they charge way too much money for the license.
For the license of that state. Yeah, I know. I had a winery. I closed down in 2016, but I ran across the same thing. You know, you can't ship to certain states or they won't let you. So I understand
right. And
that.
The states we ship to are listed in the wine shop page.
Oh, okay. Excuse me. I have to talk about this because it's on the news everywhere. The heat right now, how is that affecting the vineyard and all of your workers?
Well, the crew is in the vineyard very early in the morning and not the entire day. So we make sure that we have nice shade available for breaks and cool water for them to drink, but we've also shortened their time out in the sun and the heat. So then we have some other things that they can do in closer to the winery and that sort of thing. Our soils, we have soil moisture monitors in several locations. Our soils are fairly heavy clay, and we good rains this past winter. So we're looking at those soil moisture monitors, and so far so good. The leaves and things in our vineyard are still green all the way through. I do know that some places that have had even higher temperatures than we have a different type of soil did a little bit of irrigation prior to the heat forecast to try and get the vines through. I've also heard of some others that have gone through and clipped the really, really tall canes to cut them back and concentrate the energy of the plant in a smaller space rather than letting it all go out extra long canes and leaves.
Right.
So by and large, I think we're getting through. Oh. It's very rare that California has this much heat for such a long duration. And so it's an exceptional part of this growing season. Next week is supposed to be back toward normal average summer temperatures. So
are they predicting that?
Regroup and reassess.
Well, if I can, I want to add something to that. So it's exceptional weather, but California is known for exceptional wines, and every vintage is great.
Yeah. Well, I lived in Concord, up east, east of San Francisco.
Yeah.
And I lived there for 6 years, but this was back in the 70s, in mid to late 70s, I lived there. But
nephew who graduated high school there.
Oh, really? Yeah. I love the area. Yeah. I absolutely love the area. If it weren't for the fact that, it cost you, three times as much for everything, then I probably would live there still. But it got a little out of hand, even when I was living there.
Well, and another thing about the growing season and the heat in the vines, we're just now on the cusp of when we're going to start seeing verizon. And so the grapes have been growing the berries at this point, and we're just about at that time in the season where they're going to gain sugars and the reds will have colors, visible colors to know. So I'm glad that the heat wave isn't spurring that along too fast, because that's where so many of the flavors continue to develop, and we count on the hang time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without question. And it's happened different places. I mean, not just the heat wave, not just hitting you, but there's places around the world where the heat came in and just made for really a flat wine because the grapes developed so quickly. And so, it's good to hear that yours is not.
Yeah, because we're not quite
rising
there yet.
Well, that's good. The advantage of the Santa Cruz Mountains. With our mountains and our higher elevations and the great contour changes and different exposures, and that's why we've got so many different varietals that we can grow on this, wonderful piece of land.
And we notice the marine influence. We're not as cool and foggy as the coastal side of the Santa Cruz Mountains. We're on the inland side of it. But we will wake up of a morning with overcast or fog. Very often we've got dew on the cars and the deck and things. So that cooling maritime influence is part of what makes this AVA such a great place to grow grapes and make wine. Because you've got nice warm days, and then you have the cool overnight. And then the next day you're warm and cozy again, and then you cool down overnight. And it just makes for a wonderful spot for growing really nice grapes to make great wine.
Yeah.
And it's good for visiting
It's beautiful, and it's close enough to San Francisco and San Jose too that you know you can fly into any of those places and check you guys out and enjoy
That's
the time
right.
there.
I mean,
we've been
from here. So many people talk about wine country, and it used to be a 2-hour drive to Napa. Now with traffic, it might be 3.
Yeah.
And so instead of sitting in the car that long, come explore the wineries in this region. There's a lot to offer and discover here.
And you know, you've got you guys up on the hills there. You've got Livermore Valley that has exploded in the number of wineries there over the last, you know, 15 years. And you get a lot of wineries in the area there. And if, you know, instead of going to Napa, I tell people you need to go to Napa at least once in your life, just like you need to go to Disney World or Disneyland at least once in your life. But once you've been, then you're
well,
done. Yeah.
I like to go to Disneyland more than once.
Go to Epcot. Epcot's more for us, and then, you know, Disneyland's more for the kids.
Miss Magic Mountain.
I was on Magic Mountain once, and right in the middle of the ride, they turned on all the lights and stopped the coaster. Mechanical problem. So they stopped the coasters, all the coasters, and turned on the lights. And we sat there for 10 minutes, and they turned off the lights and started the coasters. But the allure of Magic Mountain disappeared. I just, you know, it was because I'm looking at all these steel beams and holding up the tracks and all the stuff inside. And so, you know, Magic Mountain didn't appeal to me anymore after that. So, yeah. Yeah, that was sad. Mike, do you have any questions for Bill and Dorst about anything?
Nope. No, you've answered pretty much everything I was thinking about, but you got that. Taking notes, enjoying the show, and thank you very much. No, it's been great. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Very good. Bill, Dorst, before we leave, give us all of your contact information again, the web address, Facebook, X.
The website is garrodfarms.com, GARRODFARMS.com, and facebook.com/CooperGarrod, just the two names scrunched right up together. And for Instagram, it's the @ and then all run together, Cooper Garrod Vineyards. And that's where we're visible.
And phone number?
408-867-7116.
And an address so people can look it up on.
You can find us. Yeah, and find out how to get here. 22645 Garrod Road, GARROD Road, Saratoga, California, 95070.
And there you go. All right, fantastic. You guys were really enjoyable and educational. I loved having you on tonight and talking about this. The certifications that are popping up all the time now, I don't see how people can keep up with them. They say, oh, this says this on the bottle, but now they know what sustainability is on the bottle, and I hope they look for that. So
we do too.
Yeah.
We do too. Thanks so much for the time and for visiting, Ron and Mike.
Oh, thank you both for taking the time out today and talking with us. And best of luck to you, and if
thank
I'm
you.
Ever back out in California, I am definitely going to put you guys on my list of a visit. So
we will count on that.
Looking forward to it.
All right, very good. Y'all take care. Have yourself a good evening, and hopefully we'll talk sometime soon.
Cheers.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And bye now. Okay.
All right. Very good.
So that's sustainable. Now we know what sustainable is, which is almost the same as organic, which is pretty close to the same as regenerative, which is not too far different than biodynamic. It's just the different different processes to get to the best grape that they can possibly give us and make the wine from. So,
yeah.
No, that's
yep.
Yeah, that's cool. What it all boils down to.
Yeah. Sounds like a nice area too.
Oh, yeah, it is gorgeous there. I didn't know they were that close to town. So I've been up on those hills before. I probably have been to the winery before. I don't remember it. It's been so long that I've been up in those hills in that area, but. I probably have been to the winery and just don't know, but it's a it is a gorgeous area there, without question. Let's see if we have any holidays or anything coming up here. World Kebab Day is tomorrow. National Beans and Franks Day is Saturday. Shark Awareness Day is Sunday. Orange Chicken Day Monday. Artificial Intelligence Appreciation Day is Tuesday the 16th.
Wow.
Appreciating the artificial intelligence. Cap, he's been on the show quite a few times. He says he always says thank you whenever he talks to artificial intelligence. You know, he asks for a question, then they give it to him. He always says thank you, he says, because when AI takes over, he wants AI to know that he was one of them that was friendly to him. And so,
right.
You know, he's got to, you know, watch her. You never know. Never know. And then next Wednesday is National Tattoo Day. Whoa. I have no tattoos, so I can't relate to that. So, I don't know. But that's what's coming up this next week here. And do we have any? Let me see. I forgot to look and see if there's any wine holidays coming up the next week here. Let's see, July. Today is, tomorrow, International Cava Day. So that's sparkling wine, cava. So that comes, that's International Cava Day tomorrow. So go out and get yourself a bottle and enjoy a bottle of cava tomorrow.
I prefer that over the beans. You mentioned National, what was it, something beans?
Beans and Franks.
Beans and Franks, yeah. I'll take the cava.
There you go.
I can have the beans. I never got into beans, actually. I tried it many years ago as a kid and never got into it. So,
never,
not a fan.
Not a fan of beans.
Cava?
Huh? Cava.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. So, there you go. So, you have options.
Yes. Yes. We'll
don't
take the
don't
cava.
Be like Mike. Don't eat beans. And...
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't like beans, I just never caught on.
Right. That's unusual. I don't hear people not being a bean eater very much. Yeah, yeah.
I know, and it's sad because you see them always on campouts and out a thing of beans, hook them up, and everybody's just eating beans raw, and oh my gosh, I get
you just never been a bean eater. That is strange. Not many people are not bean eaters.
That was all that was available. I would be the one they would have to bury first of starvation because there's no way I would.
Well, you would be the one that they would mix in with the beans that had a little protein. They'd cook you up too because you'd be dying first. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, if it comes to that point. Yeah.
Yeah, that's even more unusual.
a little dark ending to the show tonight.
Odd turn. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well,
there you go.
So that's it for the holidays. Beans and Franks tomorrow if you're so inclined. Mike isn't. And cava is a sparkling wine from Spain. And so you've got that available. So,
very cool.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
And thank you to the guests again, Bill and Doris. It was enjoyable. Yeah. Good conversation.
Mm-hmm. I did catch a little snippet that they said they started, and it was just like a quick blur, but they started the winery 20 years ago, I think he said.
I think they joined it 20 years ago. The winery's been in existence, I think, a lot longer than that.
Yeah, I got that. Yeah, the property was in the family since 1893.
Yeah.
I got that down. That was one of the things. And then they got into it, I guess, 20 years ago. Okay, so that's what.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, got it. That's what happened. And from the way they talk, they have children or even grandchildren that are working there now. I should have asked them about that. I didn't think about it. But it seems like they have. They mentioned another generation is working. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
I know.
We will be here next Thursday, which is the 18th of July.
We have a guest too.
We have a guest.
Let me dig this out while we are. Let's see. I've got to look on my calendar and find the right date and the right page. And that's how I keep everything straight. Okay, next week, Kira from Napa Valley Wine. K-I-R-A from Napa Valley Wine.
Okay.
And so let me see if I can... I got any from my information. Carson has been the one I've been talking to. And where is Carson? Well, I can't find him right now. I'm going to have to look him up here, I guess.
I got a winemaker and owner of Olivia... Brion and Cantadora Wines. Does that ring a bell? I just I don't know her last name. I don't know.
Yeah,
I
just write it down here. Let's see. Where's Carson? Well, I don't know. Kira, I'll have to look up Carson because I need to. He's here. I always write down the name of the person who I'm corresponding with, so that way if I'm trying to look for somebody, I'm not trying to look for Kira and she's not there. It's Carson's the one I'm corresponding with. But for some reason, I'm not seeing Carson. Yeah. Well, I'll look it up. I will send you an email and let you know, but Kira from Napa Valley Wine is... our guest next week. So,
We'll have on. That's July 18th, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio, social media, and every place else that we're on. Join us live then, or tune in on the archives. We appreciate that as well.
And if you have any Saturday
comments, Saturday at 12 o'clock.
Saturday 12 o'clock on. Give yourself a promo here. Yeah, we should make up a promo for the show for you guys.
Do I have a...
Tune in to All About Wine with Ron on Flightline Radio.
Wow.
There you go. That's energetic.
Live on Thursday. Yeah, and then it's the encore. So you'll hear this one this coming Saturday, which is July something, 11, 12, 13,
13.
I actually use my fingers to count that out. Unbelievable. But tune in and after my show at 12 p.m. for the encore of All About Wine. I appreciate it. And,
there you go.
Yeah, so thank you. We'll talk to you all then.
Yeah.
Have a good
Okay. I think I found Kristen. That's the wrong Kristen. We got Kristen on July 25th coming up. No, okay. Well, I'll email you and let you know. Thank you for listening. And thank you, Bill and Doris, for taking the time and joining us tonight. And we'll see you all next week.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
Okay.
All right. We're out in the green.
Let me go in the green room.